First of all, thanks a lot to the organizers, and thanks a lot for you all to be here. I'm going to talk about non-minimal universal extra dimensions, and this is work in progress collaboration with Arjun Menon, Dan Phelan, and Aaron Peters, all at the University of Michigan. And to give you the outline, I'll first give you a quick review on universal extra dimensions, then talk on UED as a effective field theory. And the purpose of this is that universal extra dimensions have been explored very well. However, it is well known that there are lots of free parameters in universal extra dimensions if you look at it in detail. And in most of the phenomenological studies so far, most of those parameters have been fixed. And we argue that you really, if you consider this as an effective field theory, should take all those parameters into account. So this is our larger message. And as a particular application, we just take a subset of those parameters into account and show that indeed you can change the lightest Kaluza-Klein particle of the UED models by taking those into account. And this is of particular relevance because the lightest Kaluza-Klein particle is providing the dark matter candidate of those models. So as a review, UED is a pure bottom-up approach to answer the question, how large can extra dimensions be if you take matter fields into the bulk? So you just consider a 5D model, take all standard model fields into a flat extra dimension, then identify the zero mode spectrum with a standard model, and in order to get chiral fermions, you compactify on this 1 mod Z2. Now, this compactification preserves the Z2 parity, and due to this Z2 parity, the lightest Kaluza-Klein excitation is stable and provides a dark matter candidate. Few remarks on the tree-level spectrum, which make calculation quite easy. One is all the fields can be expanded in the same Kaluza-Klein basis, basically just sine cosine functions. The 4D parameters are related to the 5D parameters just by trivial rescaling of appropriate powers of pi r, where r is the compactification radius. And at tree level, you indeed have only two free parameters. One is the compactification scale, and the other one the yet-to-be-determined Higgs mass. And this is the full UED action. You literally just take the standard model action and promote all the fields to 5D fields and all your standard indices to 5D indices. And I'm showing you this action because we are going to argue that for every single time you have here, you will get an additional free parameter, because you can, for every bulk term, write down the brain localized term, which satisfies the 4D gauge invariance and your 4D Lorentz invariance, which is all you want to preserve.
You probably could do more with the derivatives and the extra dimensions.
Oh, you can, of course, in this model add higher dimensional.
Yes,
you could, of course, also add higher dimensional operators and also higher derivative operators. We consider only the brain localized terms because those are all dimension 4, so they are lowest dimension. But as I wanted to say here, if you take UED as a higher dimensional and therefore non-renormalizable field theory, you should consider it as an effective field theory. You can do a naive dimensional analysis to see where you expect your cutoff of the effective field theory. And this is lying low at about the 50th KK level. So if you look at theories with Kaluza-Klein standard scale of about a TeV, you effectively have a theory with a cutoff at 50 TeV. And indeed, higher dimensional operators would become dangerous there as well, and you would have to demand that your underlying theory is forbidding operators like, for example, proton decay and inducing operators. Our whole point is that unless you specify the underlying theory, you should really write down all operators which are allowed by the symmetries. And this includes higher dimensional operators in the, on the boundaries and in the bulk, but also brain localized operators which are just analogs of the bulk operators. And here, as an example, I took out the kinetic term for the SU2 gauge bosons, where we just use RW here as a free parameter. Note also that we pick the boundary terms on equal on both brains. This is because we consider the Z2 symmetry as a theory, as a symmetry which arises from the underlying model. If you would not demand on keeping the Z2 symmetry, then you would immediately lose your dark matter component. The best studied example are minimal universal extra dimensions, and this was done and defined in a paper by Cheng, Machuk, and Schmalz, who did the full one-loop renormalization of the UED model. And there it becomes apparent already, when you compactify on an S1 mod Z2, then in order to cancel your divergences, you need to include boundary localized kinetic terms. So even if you assume the absence of those operators at tree level, you induce them. And the definition of the minimal UED model really is that all those boundary localized terms vanish at the cutoff scale and are only induced due to renormalization. But this is picking one specific point in your full parameter space. And this is again from Cheng, Machuk, and Schmalz. Here you see the tree level spectrum at the first KK level. And here you see the one loop corrected spectrum. And the thing I wanted to point out here is that the lightest mode you get in MUED is typically the KK photon. And this should be explained with more, because of course you get a mixing between, or you get the photon and the Z as a linear combination of the SU2 neutral gauge boson and of the U1y neutral gauge boson. The Weinberg angle at the first KK level is different than the standard model Weinberg angle, so this KK photon is almost identical to the KKB.
So if you have a non-renormalizable theory, how do you do the loop correction? Hard momentum cut?
What is done in Cheng, Machuk, and Schmalz is indeed a hard momentum cut at that scale. Mini review on phenomenology done, and apologies to everybody who has been working on this. There is lots of more constraints. I just put up a selection. So you have a lower bound on the compactification scale, because the KK modes have not been observed at detectors yet. Also, there is work by the Munich group on flavor change in neutral currents, and electroweak precision data has been analyzed, where you have the additional Kaluza-Klein modes contributing to your diagrams. Then you get an upper bound from dark matter, because your lightest particle gets a Rayleigh density, which you can calculate, assuming that the dark matter is thermal. And if you get a compactification radius which is larger than about 1.5 TeV, then you overclose the universe. And as a final remark, there is quite an extensive literature on distinguishing SUSY models from UED models, because the spectrum I showed you on the last slide at least has a very similar particle content to SUSY. And in principle, you would have to distinguish the spins of the KK resonances versus the SUSY particles, which is not completely trivial at a Hadron machine like LHC.
What's the mass of the radion?
In this setup, the radion is not considered, so the extra dimension is considered as a completely fixed background.
Well, what is the reasonable mass for the radion?
This wasn't specified by Applequist.
Can you specify?
No, I can't. I can't, because it's really a bottom-up approach, and in order to do that, I would have to make assumptions about the impact theory. But it is generically considered a problem that you might get light radion modes, which then become your lightest Kaluza-Klein particles. So this is certainly a weakness or a problem in UED models. So from this, the emission questions are: what do non-minimal terms do to the mass spectrum and the couplings, and what are the implications for collider phenomenology in dark matter, which might change completely. And as a more modest startup, we just try to construct a model where the lightest Kaluza-Klein particle is any WIMP, i.e. an interesting dark matter particle, other than the WIMP you get in the standard minimal UED setup. and interesting candidates would be the neutral gauge boson from the SC2, the scalar partner of the Higgs. Then at the KK level, you also get two charged Higgses and a pseudo-scalar Higgs. And in principle, you could also consider the KK neutrino. However, this is ruled out already by relic density and direct detection of dark matter candidates by two papers of similar intent.
How about quark and Ansel-Lennes?
Then you would have a strongly interacting.
Then you know it depletes itself very, very severe that depletion of place. So you can get away with my small.
I
it is stable, I think you're still in control.
Yeah.
Maybe from heavy elements.
It combines.
Okay, so what we did was just taking the boundary localized kinetic terms for the gauge bosons into account. And you can again do naive dimension analysis to see that this parameter naturally can be of the order 1. Now, whenever you have boundary localized terms, you induce mixing between the KK modes. However, for pure gauge fields, there is a paper of Carena, Tate, and Wagner, who showed that if you slightly modify your orthogonality relation you have on your Kaluza-Klein modes, then you can take this those brain terms into account and find the diagonal basis. And they also studied the masses of the KK modes. And the interesting bit here is that as soon as you switch on your brain parameter, you reduce the mass of your KK modes with respect to a compactification scale. This is just taken from Karen et al., Tate and Barker, and they plotted for the whole range of R over R up to 100. Natural values would be roughly of the order 1, but even for an order 1 value, you can reduce the mass by about 20%. And what we do is just putting this in a full UED setup. Now, then what you find is that the Kaluza-Klein basis for the gauge bosons differs from the Kaluza-Klein basis of the other fields. For SQ3, the results are relatively simple. It turns out you can indeed push down the mass of the first KK gluon to be the LKP. However, then you get strongly interacting dark matter, which is phenomenologically excluded. For the electroweak sector, it is getting more interesting, however also more complicated, because now you have to look at electroweak symmetry breaking, and you have your gauge fields and your Higgs field in different bases. And the main technical problem is to find an appropriate gauge fixing in the presence of both boundary localized terms and the electroweak symmetry breaking. However, you can establish an analogon of the unitary gauge, where you can then separate the physical gauge and Higgs modes. And what you find if you do that, if you just include boundary kinetic terms for the gauge bosons, is that the Higgs spectrum is not modified, i.e. your Higgs KK modes stay at the compactification scale. In the gauge sector, you have a few technical complications because you reintroduce a mixing due to the electroweak symmetry breaking. However, if you calculate the mass matrices, then you see that the Kaluza-Klein mixing terms are always bound by the electroweak mass, so as long as your compactification scale is sufficiently above, say, 90 GeV, you can treat it as a mass insertion. And from that, what you find is that the masses for the charged gauge bosons are the standard correction you know from electroweak symmetry breaking, plus the Kaluza-Klein mass at first mode, which now is lowered from the compactification scale due to the brain term, as you saw in the diagram before. What's happening in the neutral gauge boson sector is that you get the analog of BW3 mixing in order to find your KK photon and your KKZ. And the mass matrix looks like this, where here you have the contributions from the five derivatives from the Kremnitzer-Klein masses, and here you have contributions which are on the diagonal the same as standard model contributions. On the off-diagonal, you get the standard model contribution times an overlap integral of the wave functions. But what you can see from this matrix now is, in principle, you can, if you choose different boundary localized terms for the U1 and the SU2, you can choose those masses such that this entry of the matrix is smaller than the U1 entry. And if you diagonalize the matrix, then you find an LKP which is mainly W-like. And what I mean with that is that this is an LKP which interacts with the SU2 gauge coupling and not with the U1-Y gauge coupling. So to summarize, as a broader message, if you really honestly treat UED and take all terms which respect all the symmetries into account, then you have a large parameter space. And LHC is coming up. And if you want to do an honest comparison between UED models and SUSY models, then a more complete mapping of the UED parameter space certainly would be desirable. And on the second point, if you include boundary localized terms, we showed that you can indeed change the character of the Leibniz-Klein particle. A start has been made in studying non-standard dark matter candidates. There was just a paper coming out by Machev et al. Last week, who considered KKZs and KKXs and calculated the relic densities and bounds from direct detection from it. But certainly, even in that toy model, there are further open questions, and here are just some. So we are planning to publishing soon the results on the gauge bosons, and we do the same analysis for the Higgses to see whether you can get H1 or A1 LKPs, but there are lots of open questions still. Thank you.
If you do the IHC studies, you essentially fix all the masses, right, so that the endpoints coincide between the cascades of SUSY and UED. So the remaining, the three parameter you have are these single doublet mixing angles.
When you say LHC studies and fixing endpoints, you mean the comparisons?
Jenny Smilly and stuff.
Yes. As far as I know, what they do is they assume an identical mass spectrum.
Yeah, because otherwise it would be easy to draw. I mean, you know, whatever. I mean, you need to test the hypotheses of spin, not of different masses.
This is, yes.
So then, but you have to take into account this mixing angle. This mixing angle has quite an effect on the distributions of the invariant masses. What does your analysis tell us about these mixing angles? I mean, because what we're doing right now is we just vary them, right? So we vary them over, like, you know, the entire range fairly brutally.
I don't want to make too strong claims, but as far as I know, most of the studies looking at decay chains assume that your lightest Kremnitzer-Klein particle is the B1.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this would give you something like a Z1 state,
mm-hmm.
and this certainly could have an impact on those decay chain analysis. But as far as I know, nothing has been done on that so far.
Okay, so what you want, the one would want people to do is basically, because when they include a Z and a B, just they assume it's lighter, so you want people to not interchange and mix those and see what they can do.
What you see here basically is that you can get the analog of Bino-Reno mixing also in UED.
Mm-hmm.
And so far it has been assumed that the dark matter candidate is, because in the MUED model, the Weinberg angle, you get sine squared theta of 10 to the minus 3. So the KK photon is literally identical to the B. And this is just showing to you that if you look at the larger parameter space, you can certainly change that.
So when people talk about dark matter particles here, then naturally probably go back to the temperatures of the annihilation result, or something like 1/20 to of the color codes one mass. So how far back do they can reasonably go back in temperature. I mean, you cannot start with temperature equals to where there were 30 codes of prime masses.
You have the hard cutoff you have, so to speak, is the cutoff where your theory literally breaks down. You only have an effective field theory description below the at most 50th kJ.
So in this framework, it's not known how to do inflation or how to generate variance.
Everything what is done at an energy scale above that cutoff has to be explained in the end by the embedding theory.
Including variance.
Including variance. SUSY is certainly a nicer model. This is a bottom-up approach to see what is possible and how you can think some apart.
Can we consider the bulk Hayek method effect of the bulk Hayek method?
No. And I don't know whether there are any studies on those. I mean, obviously, dangerous operators you would immediately get if you write down higher dimensional operators, which induce proton decay, which induce flavor change in neutral currents. But again, from an effective field theory study point of view, I would just say this is giving you a constraint on a parameter in your effective action. And you cannot really say anything about that unless you specify the embedding theory.
You showed a graph with the resultant spectrum from one loop perturbation.
We mean this section, yes.
Yeah. And you said that this comes from using the hard color. So my question is, how do those masses depend on the color? Do they depend on... Is it logarithmic dependent? Is it linear? If it's linear, I can't believe any results.
You get a logarithmic dependence of the cutoff in the corrections. And the way they feed in here really is that you assume the cutoff and you assume the parameter to vanish at that cutoff, and then below that you get a logarithmic contribution to your mass.
What if it's treated with quadratic divergences in the scalar masses?
Oh, you mean concerning the Higgs sector,
for example?
Oh, in the Higgs sector you still have function. This is not addressing the hierarchy problem at all.
Okay, if there are no more questions, then we'll take Thomas again.